Happy Thursday and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. My guest tonight is Donna Alward. A busy wife and mother of three, two daughters plus the family dog, Donna Alward believes hers is the best job in the world, a combination of a stay-at-home mom and a romance novelist. Donna loves being back on the East Coast of Canada after nearly 12 years in Alberta, where her romance career began, writing about cowboys and the West. She is the author of Somebody Like You, Someone to Love, and Somebody's Baby that just came out recently. And you can find more about Donna at her website, and you can follow her on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or at her Amazon page. And let's bring her on the show live. Welcome, Donna.
Hi.
Welcome from the cold east coast of Canada.
And white. Very, very
and
white.
And it was 83 here today, so I just thought I'd tell you that.
Thanks. It makes me feel so much better.
But we have a special kind of snow here in southeast Texas. It's called pollen. And it's yellow. So if you ever heard the phrase, don't eat the yellow snow, well, this is our version of the bad yellow snow down
wow.
here.
Wow. We'll get that too,
horrible.
But just in a couple of months, you know, after we
yeah,
thaw out.
I swear there's two pollen seasons here. It's ridiculous. So anyway, welcome to the show, and I hope you're warm and toasty, and let's talk about some cowboys and warm things that warm you up. When did you, you're a stay-at-home mom and romance novelist, when did you decide to become a writer? Were you always wanting to write? Is this like a childhood dream, or is it something you came upon?
I did always want to write, and I did my degree in English Lit and did a lot of creative writing. And then I got married and was part of the real world and had to have a job. And I kind of let it go. I still read a lot, but I stopped writing quite as much. And then after my second child was born, I ended up with a pretty good-sized case of postpartum depression, and I was home because I was living out in Calgary at the time, and I was home in New Brunswick right after 9/11, probably like a month after 9/11, and those events had really affected me, and I was just starting to feel better, and then, you know, it was a really scary time, and so my sister said to me, you know, stop complaining about your life. You know, stop whining about it and do something. You always said you wanted to write a book, so why don't you do that? So I thought, well, fair enough. So I went back home, and I thought, well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to sit down. I'm going to write a book. And I did, and it was horrible and awful. I made all kinds of rookie mistakes, but I loved it. So I kind of fell in love with the process, and it took me almost 5 years after that and about 10 manuscripts before I finally sold. But it's a good thing I liked it because otherwise I probably would have given up long before then.
I understand the whole 9/11 and pregnancy thing. I had my daughter in November after 9/11 and was in my last, you know, I was already huge by 9/11. And I worked at a government building. So
yeah.
I was scared to death and, you know, wondering, what the hell am I doing bringing a child into this world? My
right.
first child.
Right.
And I mean, it was a really bad, and I had pretty bad, well, not horrible, but, yeah, I had a good case of postpartum and didn't want to go back to work,
rough.
You know. It was awful.
Yeah, I didn't. I was, at that point, I'd stayed home after my first child was born, and so then by the time my second came along, I was already a stay-at-home mom. But my husband worked for an airline, too, so that was one of the things that really, I mean, it really hit that industry hard and made us think. And I remember talking about going home that October and my mom and a few other people thinking, like, oh, my gosh, you're going to fly? And I'm like, yes, I'm going to fly. You think something like that's going to keep me from living my life? Nuh-uh.
Right.
I mean, if airline employees won't fly on their own planes, there's not much hope for anybody else. But it
right?
was a really strange time in our history, and to say it didn't affect me a lot would be a lie. So it's that sort of came out of that, doing something just for me and something that was hopeful in the face of what was a really dark time, but also brought out some of the very best things in people. So
mm-hmm.
So that's how that happened.
So do you think that the whole process of the writing, getting it out, it was a really therapeutic thing for you at that time then?
I think the process was more than the stories, because mm-hmm. I think for me it was something that was really just for me, and it felt almost indulgent, and it really sort of fed my creativity, which of course started to make me happier as well. So yeah, it was
mm-hmm.
it was therapeutic, and there've been other times in my life since. I mean, we're talking that was 16 years ago.
Right.
Since then, there have been other books that I've written during times when, things have been not going well in some part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so writing that story has really sort of helped me work through it. I remember my first book that I had no revisions in I wrote it in about a month, and it was right after my father-in-law had passed away, and he'd been sick for a few months, and it was really, really difficult. And I think I'm always going to associate that book, and I love
mm-hmm.
that book, as being sort of what got me through, those rough months. So it's kind of cool that way.
Well, on the flip side of that, too, readers also, some of us read to get through really hard times. I know when I was a young divorcee that it was really hard on me, and I at first I couldn't read at all, but then I all of a sudden I got kind of lost in paranormal fiction. It was the thing at the time, and it was how I stayed sane. It was how I escaped from my reality for a while to cool my brain. Lower my heart rate and the whole bit. Yeah. So when you hear those stories, do you ever get those stories from your readers where they're like, wow, this just really got me through a hard time when I was having to deal with such and such? Or
absolutely. And I love those times because, I mean, that's why I read. I want to be transported somewhere else. And one of the things I love about the romance genre in particular is heroines are empowered, and so when we kind of go into that world, we're empowered. And if
mm-hmm.
we're feeling unempowered in reality, it's a great way to not just escape but sort of recharge ourselves. And when I get those letters, it's sometimes I've cried sometimes when I've gotten them, because some of them are really really touching. And actually, one of my favorite reader letters came not from a book I wrote, but an article I wrote about actually writing through anxiety and depression. And
mm-hmm.
and she read it and went and got help. And,
oh, wow. That's
yeah,
awesome.
And then wrote me a few months later, sort of got up the courage later to say, I read this article or whatever. And so we actually just touched base a few months ago. I checked in to see how she was doing. She's doing great. I found that really, really profound. So really that's why I do what I do.
Yeah.
Well,
and like you said, when you start out doing something for yourself and then it ends up being, wow, look what I've done,
Well, and then
I
it gets to be your job.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
We could all want for such things. So how did you learn how to be a full-time mommy and find the writing time
for yourself.
That's actually really funny.
I'm asking for a friend, yeah.
Okay, so when my kids were little, because my kids are pretty much grown now. I have one in university and one just finishing high school. So mm-hmm. the stay-at-home mom thing is not quite as accurate as it used to be, although I swear to God I'm busier now than I ever was with whatever. But when I first started and the kids were small, I would get up at like 5 in the morning, 5:30, and I'd have two whole blissful hours of quiet because my husband would go to work early. He worked shift work at the airline. And I would boot up the computer and I would make a coffee and I would seriously have 2 hours that were just heaven. And this was before I sold, so I didn't have to worry about all that marketing stuff. And readers, I just had to worry about, please write a story that's good enough to be published. So then once they were up at 7:30, I could probably kiss any focus goodbye, although sometimes I managed to sneak in, you know, a little more time later in the day. Then when they started school, it was heaven because I was, you know, I stayed at home and I had generally about, really only about 5 hours a day by the time I got them to school and got home. But that was plenty, and it was really great to have that quiet time. But then, you know, once I sold, it became a whole other thing because it suddenly wasn't just about writing and submitting. It was about, you know, building a brand and marketing. Yeah. And you know, it's a small business, really. So I wish I could give wonderful, great, handy hints about work-life balance. And, you know, I could tell you that my house was spotless and I cooked great meals every night. But the truth is, it's a little ragged around the edges. And tonight was frozen pizza night. So, yeah. You know, it is
what
it is.
I just got done ordering Domino's.
Right. So it's you just do the best you can and try to be kind to yourself, I think.
Yeah, I completely understand. And it's got to be, you know, the kind of a almost bittersweet thing to know that, you know, your kids are older now and you don't have to spend that kind of quality time with them all day long. Like, I'm still having to do. But you're gonna miss it when it's over too. So when they, you know, I'm sure you miss your oldest off at college.
Sure. I do. But honestly, she calls me like every day, or we text every day, and it's like, But no, she's really starting to do the adulting thing, and I do miss her, and I kind of miss our late night conversations because it would drive my husband crazy. But we'd start on this big philosophical conversation at like 10:30, and he'd be like, "I'm off to bed. Like, you guys are crazy." But there does come a time too where, and I was talking to my best friend about this, where they, you know, the kids get old enough and you start to see that you're on the cusp of having your own life again, and it's actually a little bit exciting. So that's kind of where I am.
I can only dream for such things.
Well, it'll happen.
I'm praying for it. My husband and I got married, you know, late. We've known each other for a long time, and we got married much later. We were both in our 40s. So it's like we didn't get the whole honeymoon and time together. We did because we dated in high school. But we're like, we can't wait to retire so we can have that time alone together that, you know, most married couples get.
No, we were young. I mean, I'm 45 this year, so that's I just said that on the air. I'm 45 this year, but my kids are almost grown. So I'm excited. I'm actually kind of excited about that. My husband's a little bit older than me, so
yeah. So mine too. But I was one of those ladies who, you know, I had the daughter in 2001, and then 10 years later I have another one, and.
Oh, girl, you're crazy.
I started out, I know, exactly. So, I mean, I was all set. I was like, I know when my retirement's going to be. I know exactly what day I'm going to be able to retire because she'll be gone. She'll be married and have kids by then. You know, I got it all set. And then I had another kid. So.
I'm probably never going to retire, so that's not an issue for me. I'd like to travel more, but I'm not sure I'll retire.
You're going to do what you love, so that's good. Right. And, you know, that's a good thing about writing, too. I think it's it's so much what you love. It's so much a part of who you are that you can keep doing it, and it's not going to feel like work, except for the deadline part and the marketing part.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah. So, so why romance? What was romance? What keyed you on to romance? Why not women's fiction or literary fiction or sci-fi?
Okay, it was kind of one of those stories where ignorance is bliss. Because I loved doing my literature degree. Loved. And I was a bit of a snob about it, really. Like, you know, I did a lot of poetry, and I was sort of into, like, the literary scene. But secretly on the side, you know, I was like, Laverl Spencer has another book coming out. I need to be at the bookstore. Or Judith McNaught. And then I discovered Nora Roberts. And I was like, oh, my God, these are awesome. And I was telling my daughter the other day, because she's going to the same university where I got my degree. And, and I said, you know, the only time I ever skipped class there was when I started November of the Heart by Laverl. And I read until about 1 in the morning, and then I had to get some sleep. And I got up and I went to school the next day. And I sat in the cafeteria and skipped my morning classes and bawled my eyes out through it in the cafeteria because I had to finish it, and it was the only time I ever skipped class. So, yeah, so I and the first romance I ever read really was Vows by Laverl. So I kind of cut my teeth on those, and then when I decided to write, I just was going to write a story, and I didn't know a lot about the conventions of writing a romance novel. I just knew I wanted to write a novel, and this is what it was going to be about, and it was a romance that came out. And so when I looked to where I was going to submit it, the first place I went to was the Harlequin website, because it was right around 50,000 words, and, you know, back in 2001, they were the only category of romance people around.
Right, that's true.
So, you know, I looked there, and I joined the online community, and then it just it grew from there, and now I know that it's because I gravitate toward love and hope and the belief that, you know, there's a happy ever after. And it might not always be easy, but as long as, you know, they can face it together, it's okay. And I think it's just that core belief that sort of guided me in that direction.
Yeah, I think it's the happy ever after that, you know, like I was saying, we like that escape. We like that we want the happy ever after. And when we read a romance, we know it's going to be there. We don't have to worry about it. You know?
And it might not happen in real life, but by God, we're going to get it in our literature. Right? Like,
when you're, that's right. And when you're a busy mom, you don't have time to read. So you want to invest your time in a story that you know is not going to disappoint you in the end. That's how I feel about it. You know,
right, me too.
I don't want to read something that I don't want another Gone Girl where I'm going to throw it at the wall at the end and be like, you know. I want to read something that at the end I close it and I sigh or I wipe my tears and then I'm a very happy, happy person. So,
well, it's kind of funny because I'm going through a bit of a general fiction sort of phase right now with my reading, and it's fine, but I don't have that expectation. So it's okay. And then I know in probably 2 weeks I'll be like, okay, now I just need to go pull a really good Regency off my shelf and just get embroiled in this big scandal with a rake and a blue stocking and whatever. And because that's like crack to me. But I'm going through that sort of right now. And like I said, there's not that expectation for a happy ending necessarily. What I really don't like, though, is when I read a book that I have the expectation and it doesn't happen. So there was an author I read several years ago, and I read her first book, and I absolutely loved it. And it had the happy ending. So when her second book came out, I immediately went and got it, and I expected that it would have a happy ending, and it did not. And I was so disappointed. I was angry. So, yeah, you have to make sure that the expectation, if you're going to build the expectation into it, you better deliver at the end, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what, I guess I didn't know what to expect when I was reading Gone Girl. I knew it was a psychological thriller. I knew it would be messed up. But when the ending came, I was like, what?
I haven't read
what?
It, so.
You know, oh, gosh, just, yeah.
I'm actually reading the hotel on the corner of Bitter and Sweet, which is really good.
Oh, well, now that sounds like a good book.
It is. It is. So, yeah.
But, yeah, no, I understand your need to, you know, every now and then venture out of the genre. But so when you went to writing, you decided, I want to write The Happily Ever. I want to write The Hope. I want to, can totally understand that. And it's amazing that, to me, that words, I think that it was Stephen King or somebody said, you know, that word, something about a quote about words being magic, books are portable magic or something like that. But you typing words on a, you know, into a computer translates to someone's feeling these real emotions, you know, crying or laughing or being so happy, you know, reading a book. And it's an amazing thing that you can create those just by putting words on paper.
Yeah, it kind of is, isn't it?
I think it's really cool. I mean, you think about it, it's like, wow, words on paper made somebody just so. And, you know, I was talking to another author about this too. Sometimes when you read a book and you just feel so wrapped up in the story, you're so connected to it that when you finish it and then for days you just can't stop from thinking about, you know, what went on in the story and the characters and what's going on, that there's so much part of your imagination after that. That you can't, you know, and that's, I know that's what makes people go write fan fiction and things like that, because they just, you know, they want to keep going with those characters. But
you know, that's also the whole purpose of art, I think, of in any
inspire
form.
More art. Yeah.
And to elicit that emotional response in the reader, the listener, the viewer, whatever. You know, that's the purpose, and not everyone will interpret it the same way, but they don't have to. They bring their own emotional experience to it. So,
true.
Yeah, and to be honest, I will admit to many years ago indulging in a little bit of fan fiction myself. It was excellent, because sometimes I'd feel stuck in a book, and it'd be like, all right, seriously, this is bugging me about this series, and I'm just going to write something so they will just hook up and get it out of their system and it will get out of my head. And I had so much fun doing it, and it would get me out of a bit of a writer's block every now and again.
Right.
So a couple thousand words of crazy fan fiction.
Yeah. This character needs to get on with it.
Yeah.
This couple.
Poor guy's not getting any. He's, you know, I just got to.
Yeah, he needs to hook up. Yeah, I understand that. I've read several and watched several TV series where you're like, he's a couple, you know, there's so much sexual tension, they're in each other's face all the time. You're like, would y'all just go in the other room and please get it done?
I know, but then the tension goes away in the series, so you really don't want him to do that, because then you know the series has maybe like one season left and it's done. But at the same time, you're like, oh my lord, you can cut it with a knife. I know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's how Friends was for me. So, okay. So, what were some, you did the English degree, and like you were saying, I was a librarian, so I was the same way. I was like, oh, I only read nonfiction and literary fiction. But I took the job as a young adult librarian because, you know, I had been a teacher and I was familiar with literature for those ages, and you know, had already had classes in my undergrad and everything else. And so the girls, the teenagers, said, this was, or you know, when Twilight was just becoming a big thing, way before the movie, and they were like, "Have you read Twilight?" I was like, "No, I'm not going to read that." And they're like, "Oh my God, you got to read this! You have to have." And I was like, "Oh, I am not going to read that. I mean, I just know because it's so popular. There's just no way, you know."
Yeah.
I was hooked like a fish on, I mean, tell you what, couldn't stop, and this all started, it was like right before the movie and Breaking Dawn came out, and I couldn't get enough of it, gave it out to all of my friends, and then somebody was like, oh, you want to read an adult version of this where they actually do have sex, and oh, yeah, and then I started getting more and more paranormal romance, and I was like, oh, my gosh. So, yeah, that was my gateway drug to romance, because otherwise I was reading autobiographies of, and, you know, and The Last of the Doughboys and World War II and World War I stuff, and, you know, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I still really like that stuff, too. I just don't want to write it. Yeah.
I do, too, but I don't you know, I was like the snob. I was not going to read romance. And now it's my drug of choice, you know.
Yeah.
And I like to dole it out to others. I like to be people's pusher.
Like, sure.
I like being the romance dealer. I was the romance dealer at my library for all those years. People would come to me if they wanted a good romance because I knew all. And it's become my drug of choice as well. So, and it is because it's totally about being, you know, if I'm going to invest my time in a book, I do not want it to end where it's like, really, you know, that's just not how I envisioned, you know, that was
okay,
my expectation.
I look at it this way too, is that, you know, when I get to the end of a book, I don't want to think, oh, wow, that's a real thought-provoking ending. Sometimes I do, but most of the time I don't, because I'm sorry, but real life is thought-provoking enough. So
no,
I actually, you know, so yeah, I kind of go for the great dopamine hit of the happy ever after and the sigh at the end. It's like, okay, it is going to work out. It is going to be fine. See, it happened here. And, you know, this is. So, yeah. And there is chemistry to it, you know? Like, when I talk about the dopamine hit, it's a real thing.
Oh, absolutely. No, I agree. And I have a theory, too, about this. It's kind of crazy, but I have a theory that because romance authors are so kind to each other. They help each other out. They promote each other. There's all these people wanting to help, you know, upcoming writers, and it's such a wonderful world. I've heard that there's some cattiness going on with some people, but in general, I've never experienced anything like that, and I see how nice people are to each other online and how they help each other and everything. And the readers, I think it makes us, we're happier because I think the endorphins are higher when you're reading the Happily Ever After.
Yeah.
And you get the good cry and all of that, and you're happier people. So I
think
there
should
be
hope and the joy and all that good stuff.
Yeah.
I believe in all that stuff.
It
might be corny,
study.
But I believe in it.
No, I think there's a scientific basis for it. I totally do. And if somebody would give me a whole bunch of money, I'd find a way to research it, but I won't do that.
And you know what? It is a great industry. You did touch on something that's really amazing. And I know when people – I go to the RWA, the Romance Writers of America conference every year. And whenever somebody comes in that's not part of the romance industry to either be a speaker, give a workshop, attend as a publishing professional, whatever – almost every time they're like, we don't understand this environment. It's so warm and supportive and loud. And they always underestimate how much wine they're going to need for the week.
Oh, yeah.
But it really is a sisterhood. And my best friends are other authors who have just really stood by me through everything. And I love this industry. I love it a lot. I can't imagine not being a part of it.
Yeah. It's great. It really is. And you know, it's the only reason I think that self-publishing has come along for people who self-publish, because romance readers, we're book whores. We don't care. There can never be enough books.
Right.
You can never, you can just keep feeding them to me, and I'm going to stick them on a pile and keep reading.
And
so,
romance readers are awesome because they are vocal. They will share. They will tell their friends. They will, you know, email the author. They will, and then they will go to somebody else's, you know, if somebody else is doing a promotion or something and I'm a part of it, they'll come over and say something to me. And, you know, romance readers are different than any other fan base that I've ever seen. And again, with the kindness and the, they're very accepting, and I love it. I love everybody. I have a group hug. Time for group hug.
There we go.
Yeah.
So, I'm looking through your backlist, and what is it about cowboys that's so fascinating to you?
Oh, I'm a farm girl.
I have to ask. You're a farm girl?
I'm a farm girl through and through. So Of course, like not out west necessarily. I grew up on the east coast of Canada, so. But when I started writing, I was living in Calgary, which is, of course, home of the Calgary Stampede, the greatest outdoor show on earth. And and I loved it in Alberta. And we spent a lot of time in British Columbia. And my farm roots always, you know, I always loved being outside the city whenever there was farmland. That, I mean, that was what was really beautiful for me. And so I was writing all these manuscripts, and they kept getting rejected. And, you know, I had different premises and different things that I thought were really exciting, but really what I had to do was go back to my roots and write that. And, of course, in the romance world, you know, an apple farmer, which is how I grew up, isn't really the sexiest, but, boy, romance readers love their cowboys. And I wrote this book with a cowboy, and it was the one that sold. And then when I was with Harlequin, they were like, that did really well. We want another cowboy. And then cowboys kind of became my thing. And so then I tried to put different twists on them, right? But you know, cowboys really did become my thing. And then as I sort of morphed away from that a little bit, went to longer books, I wanted to move away from cowboys a little bit. And so I made a slight shift into small town. So it's still that warm community feeling that you get from, that you would get in a cowboy book. I mean, most of those places that I would write about were small towns or small communities that were very close-knit, and people helped each other. And so that really translated over into the small town romances that I'm writing now for St. Martin's.
So the ones you're writing now are the Darling Vermont series.
Yes, ma'am.
And this little town, the covers are beautiful, by the way. They did a really good job with these.
The covers. I was
like,
so excited.
Oh, that's so pretty. Yeah.
I
so
know.
Pretty. The colors are perfect. So tell us just kind of the premise of the little town and where the series is going. Somebody's Baby actually doesn't come out till next month, right?
It's out on the 4th, on Tuesday.
Okay.
It'll be, Someone to Love is just finishing up its release month now. Somebody Like You was out in February, and Somebody's Baby is out starting on Tuesday, April 4th. So the premise is, it's a small town in Vermont. It's very heavily tourism-based. There's a fabled kissing bridge in the middle of town that it's the story goes that whoever kisses on the kissing bridge, their love will last forever. It's a little bit, you know, a little bit corny, but they've really made it work for their tourism campaign.
Right.
And so we have a cast of characters, including the Gallagher family. So the first three books are the Gallagher brothers. So the first one has Aiden, the second one has Ethan, and the third has Rory. And their love stories with some of the crazy women in the town. So that's the basic premise. And where it's going next is, we're working on a proposal right now for three more books, hopefully, in 2018.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty excited about that. And possibly a little something special happening in between there, but it's all sort of in the planning stages. But we've definitely been talking about it, sort of know which characters are going to star in those books. And we're going to look a little closer at sort of the stories, because there's various stories about how the kissing bridge got its sort of magical powers. So there's going to be a little bit more about the actual kissing bridge in it, which is actually kind of fun.
That's neat.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. So it looks like we're going to be keeping the series going for a little while longer anyway.
So
fingers crossed. If my editor's
the...
listening, I've said it on the air. It has to happen.
Right. That's how it works.
That's exactly how it works.
So was it just originally the three?
Well, we tend to work on sort of a three-book sort of plan for each. Yeah,
every publishing house is a little different. So.
Right. And so I did a series for them previously that was set in, I made a small town in Maine called Jewel Cove. And so I did three full-length novels set in Jewel Cove, and then I did two Christmas novellas. And then we decided to move on from that series and try something a little different. So that was when we came up with the whole Darling thing. So, you know, we went with the first three books there, and then this last past month or so, we've been just talking about where it's going to go next. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
That's really awesome. And do you have other, beyond that, do you have other things on the radar?
Yeah, actually. But still with St. Martin's, actually. I have a duet of books that are going to come out. The first one, I don't have a release date yet. It's going to be digital only through their Swerve digital imprint. And they're a little different. They're actually a couple of sort of category series lengths, about 50,000 words, royalty stories that I just wanted to write forever. And so it's kind of going to go back to my category romance roots a little bit. And so I've seen the cover for the first one, which is called The Playboy Prince and the Nanny, which I just, I had so much fun. And so, yeah.
That sounds fun, though.
It kind of is fun. And seriously, I've been thinking about these books for about 6 years, and they just never really fit into my publishing schedule. So we talked about it last summer, and she's like, send me the proposal. And so I did, and then she emailed me back, and she goes, oh, my God, these are trope-tastic. I love them. So, yeah, so then we're like, let's talk. So that's
funny.
Coming up, and I'm actually finishing up the second one, which is going to be The Crown Prince's Bride. So I seem to like brothers for some reason. So it's two princes. It's kind of like if you took Will and Harry and kind of mixed it with Sabrina.
Oh,
that's cute.
Yeah, they are kind of cute. So that's kind of how I pitched it. And yeah, so it's, you know, one brother is a little more serious than the other. One's a little bit of a player. So that's on the radar for the end of this year. So, yeah.
Well, that sounds really fun. do you expect at any time to go back to Cowboys? Or is Cowboys going to be in the future?
I never say never. I've done a sort of a smaller novella series with a couple of friends that has been really fun called Not My First Rodeo. And it's based on a dating site. And we built our own sort of premise for it and bought the domain name and everything. And so we had the first trilogy published with Samhain, and of course they no longer exist.
Right.
And we had written a second trilogy that we released ourselves, but actually that's going to be re-released through Entangled sometime in the near future. So that's kind of going on too, but those are previous releases. But, you know, we still talk about maybe adding to that series now and again if you know, the right character sort of smacks us upside the head and says, hey. So, yeah, so I never say never. Cowboys are sexy.
Absolutely. Girl, I'm in Texas. You can tell me that.
Oh, a little dust on the boots? You
heck
betcha.
Yeah.
And the jeans that fit just right.
Yeah. You know, there is nothing more important than a nice tight pair of jeans on a man. So,
Yep.
For sure. Funny, you see the pictures of the baggy pants guys with the pants down, you know, their underwear all showing. It's like, I just don't get
no,
it.
No.
Or
no,
sometimes wear
no,
a pair of Wranglers.
No.
It's supposed to
I was
fit,
just
like, going to
say,
skin.
You
got to
have a good pair of Wranglers. Oh, absolutely.
Like skin. Yes, absolutely. Yep. I agree.
Yep.
So what do you see happening in the romance industry? Do you see any trends going on, any trending towards
there was a big surge in self-publishing, and I think it's kind of gone back a little bit. It's not as prominent as it used to be. But do you see any like tropes or subgenres trending?
I am probably not the person to ask about this. I think you are going to see paranormal kind of died off for a little while. I think you're going to see it come back a little bit, a little differently. Because I think for a while, you know, some people just got vampired out.
Yes.
It's the same thing with, for example, with erotica, like 50 Shades changed the game for erotica and BDSM. And there was this huge surge in popularity, but that's kind of fallen off a little bit. And it's still certainly a very viable genre and subgenre to belong to. But I think, what usually happens is things are cyclical. So, you know, something gets really popular, the market gets glutted, then it kind of wanes a little bit and something else sort of takes a surge, but it'll always come around again. So I never pay attention to when somebody says, you know, such and such is dead. No, it's not dead. It might be a little bit quieter for now, but it's still there, and there's still a flicker of life there, and it'll come back again. And you just have to, you know, stay the course. So
seems definitely cycles, for sure.
I think there's a trend toward things that are just a little bit different. Like in the last year, probably year and a half, things like biker romances became much bigger. Robin Covington, a friend of mine, I mean, she and a bunch of other authors have, I think it's called Hot on Ice, and it's a hockey box set. And I think it just made the USA Today list or whatever. But, you know, things like that there are just a little bit different. It's not the same sort of what you'd expect. And I think authors are really looking for a way to make things stand out and be different and exciting. And so I see a lot of that. But honestly, I'm looking forward to going to the conference this year and sitting in on the sessions that tell me what seems to be trending at the moment. I don't generally follow trends, so maybe that's why I don't pay a lot of attention to it, because I do what I do. You know, I do what I do, but you know, I'm just looking at it as more of a reader, and what's popping up on, you know, my Amazon page when I go shopping,
right,
and what seems to be showing up on my radar. And you know, I get a lot of word of mouth recommendations from other either readers or other writers, so I can't keep up with my TBR pile anyway.
Yeah, me either. But that's okay, you know. When I retire and I go on the road and I won't have access to a library as often, I'm going to have plenty to read.
Even if they're
10, 15 years old, there'll still be books.
Well, and the great thing is I actually have favorites that I would love to reread, but my to-be-read pile is so large that maybe at some point, you know, if I semi-retire, I'll actually be able to reread some of those books.
Maybe.
I find that exciting.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't even know what to do if I had time to read. Crazy. I force myself to have time to read. I sit there.
Yeah, me too.
Sadly,
I actually schedule it
so I can read. So I'm like, no,
yeah.
5 minutes for mommy. Just.
Yeah, just. Actually, you know what? When I had postpartum, before I even started writing, one of my doctors, I had the best GP in the world, and he said, I want you to get outside and go for a walk every day. If you can do it without the kids, so much the better. But if you have to take the kids, because my husband did work shift work, you know, that's fine. I want you to get outside for half an hour every day, and I want you to take a half hour and do something for you every day. And quite often, for me, that was reading. And we all know that when you start reading a book and it's really good, a half hour isn't usually a half hour.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, if you can manage it. And when you have two small kids, it's difficult. But if you can manage it, all of a sudden you look up and it's an hour later and you're like, damn. Yeah. Yeah, so I do schedule reading time. I'm like, okay, no, I'm shutting down. It's my reading time. Yeah.
Yeah, I do it and sacrifice other things like sleep and things like that just so I can, because I've got to read. That's my life, you know.
Oh, I don't sacrifice sleep.
Yeah, I do. I shouldn't, but because I don't get enough of, you know.
I know.
Even when I sacrifice it, but yeah, no, I just my brain needs it sometimes. It's like I need that escape time. Even if it's 5 minutes, I've got to stay up and read.
It's relaxing, and it helps your brain switch gears.
Exactly. And you forget about all the garbage you forgot to do today, so you can read this book for 30 minutes and then go to sleep thinking about the story. That's what I do.
Right, because then you can actually try to shut down that, you know, whole hamster wheel of your to-do list in your brain or whatever, and it really does help you shift gears. So
that is mommy brain.
Mommy brain, and you know what? That morphs into menopause brain.
Yeah,
I know.
I'm getting there, too.
So,
got the whole perimenopause, oh, my gosh, everything. So, I feel your pain.
Yep, you're preaching to the choir.
Well, okay, so we are getting close to our end time, and I want to make sure that everybody can find you in the best place possible online to contact you or be in contact with you. I know you have a Facebook, Twitter. They can always follow you on your Amazon page, Instagram. Do you have
all of that stuff is linked on my website. Like my website is like my hub. So plus if you go to my website and if you, when you land there, a little pop-up box will come up. It'll only come up once because I don't want to pop up on every page. That's annoying. But if people sign up for my newsletter, there's a prequel to the Darling series that sort of kicks it all off. And it's free when you sign up for my newsletter. So all you have to do is go to DonnaAllward.com to get that, and it'll just lead you through the steps, and it's all groovy.
Fantastic. I'm going to do that right now before I even start reading the second one. So, where's the best, is that the best place to find out about what you've got coming, up and coming, and what's going on in the writing world? Okay.
Yeah, I've got a blog page, which lately it's been really crazy, so I haven't updated it. I mean, I think I probably did last week, but, you know, I don't post there every day, but if there's anything coming up that's important, and there's a new release page, and then one of the best places to find out what's going on with me is my Facebook page, and then I also have a reader group for, not really a street team, just, you know, those really readers that just want to come and hang out and be part of the group, and we have a lot of fun in there, and I usually end up giving free stuff away, and it's all good.
Well, it's fun. It's nice to be able to connect with writers that you enjoy on that kind of personal level. And, yeah, I love being in reader groups. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have so much fun with the girls on there. Really, like, they will come on and just say the sweetest things. And we'll talk about what we're reading or what's going on the weekend or whatever. So they're amazing. So I'm suck at titles, so I was trying to think of what to call my reader group. And anyway, it's just Donna Allward's Amazing Readers, because they're amazing, and that was as original as I could come up with. But I have a super cute graphic so that was designed for it. So, and we have a good time. It's very much like me. You just come in and take a load off and hang out.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, and I wish you much success with the new series, and hope that the editor gets the other three on board for you.
Yeah, somehow I don't think that's legally binding, but I'm really hoping that she's going, yes. But no, thank you for having me on.
I appreciate it, and I hope that you guys start to thaw out soon up there and enjoy
some of that 83 degree weather up here. Yeah.
You can have it, honey, because I'm not looking forward to our summer down here.
I have central air, so I'm okay.
Oh,
so send it up. I'm happy to get rid of the snow up here.
Well, good luck, and thank you so much for being on, and much success with the series and getting the second kid out of the house and all the fun stuff you got ahead.
Thank you.
All right. You have a great evening.
You too, Tabitha. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. And thanks, everybody, for listening in tonight. You can find me on Facebook at The Librarian on Authors on the Air, and I'm on Twitter as HOT_librarian_. I think I'm on Instagram as TabithaPope_librarian as well. This broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, and iTunes, and right here at this link where you're listening to it, it will turn into a podcast in just a few minutes. Authors on the Air Global Radio Network can be found online at authorsontheair.com, www.authorsontheair.com. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and I think that's just about everywhere else in the social media world you can find us. Thanks for listening in this Thursday. I'll be back again next Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Until then, see you on The Librarian, and have sweet dreams.